Testament reading this morning comes from the book of Hebrews, the 11th chapter, verses 8 through 16. We're going to do 8 through 16. It's on page 225, if you want to follow along in your Bible in the pew. This is the role of faith. We've been, actually read this 2 weeks ago when we talked about Noah. And this chapter recounts many of the great heroes of our faith. And the author does an incredible job of sort of pinpointing exactly how their faith inspires ours. And so I thought this was uniquely relevant for us as we reflect on Abraham today. Listen again for God's word. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to set out for a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. And he set out, not knowing where he was going. By faith, he stayed for a time in the land he had been promised, as in a foreign land, living in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him of the same promise. For he looked forward to the city that has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. By faith he received power of procreation, even though he was too old, and Sarah herself was barren, because he considered him faithful who had promised. Therefore, from one person, and this one as good as dead, descendants were born, as many as the stars of heaven, and as innumerable grains of as the grains of sand by the seashore. All of these died in faith without having received the promises, but from a distance they saw and greeted them. They confessed that they were strangers and foreigners on the earth, for people who speak in this way make it clear that they are seeking a homeland. If they had been thinking of the land that they had left behind, they would have had an opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God. Indeed, He has prepared a city for them. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
So we got back just last night at 2:30 a.m., or this morning at 2:30 a.m. It was a fantastic trip, except for the arrival time, which everything went smoothly. It was just great. And I got to tell you that in general, I really enjoy traveling. So we had a wonderful team and we had a great time together and I loved where we were. And just traveling and seeing new places is great. But I was reminded again this week that there are some conditions to my traveling that are important to me. One of those is this little blue book called a passport. And I cannot imagine traveling to Haiti and back without something like this. This is like the magic ticket, right? I mean, as long as you've got this in your pocket, as you walk through the customs in Haiti or as you come back to the U.S., you have this overwhelming security, right, that you're going to get in. It's going to be okay. And so my main job this week was to remind people, do you have your passport? Do you have your passport? Do you have your passport? When you get it, of course, you go in a country and you get these little stamps. I had to renew mine, so mine is empty except for this one, but you get your stamp that shows where you've been, so I've got my Port-au-Prince stamp, and I look forward to having, I hope, many more of those in the future. But with this in hand, traveling is a blessing, and it really was for us this week. We had an incredible time in Haiti. We're going to be talking about it for, I'm sure, weeks and months to come, so I will make no effort to tell you all the stories now. But I want to tell you that my experience in Haiti was a little bit like the parable of the wheat and the tares. Maybe you remember this story. Jesus tells a parable. A farmer goes and sows good seed in his field of wheat. And then in the evening, an enemy comes and the enemy sows weeds or tares in the field. In the morning, as they both begin to grow up, the workers come to the owner of the field and they say, someone must have sowed weeds or tares in the evening, and what should we do? Should we pull them up? And the farmer says, no, if you pull them up now, you might damage the wheat. Let the weeds and the wheat grow up together until the harvest. Then we'll put the wheat in our barn, and we will burn the tares. And that parable is to tell us that the kingdom of God and the kingdom of evil grow up together, right? It's not that the world is getting worse and worse and worse, or better and better and better, but that both are happening together. And we saw that in overwhelmingly clear ways in Haiti. We saw incredible poverty. I mean, we saw You talk about mud huts. We saw literal mud huts, right, where the walls were made of mud and the floors were just packed dirt. We saw people dealing with illnesses that we simply do not have in our country. We saw families who had their only meal that day because they came and received it from our team. And at the same time, we saw incredible growth of God's kingdom. We saw women and men with vision to transform their nation that is overwhelmingly exciting. The school in which we partnered, Mission Starfish Haiti, is going gangbusters. They've got 400 students. It's a huge facility, but Solanto has all these plans of how they're going to go next and how they're going to engage more kids and how they can be more effective in mentoring the next generation of leaders in his nation. He's got a church plant that's growing in that building, but he's got a plan for where it's going to go next and where they're going to break ground and build a building for that church. He bought a peanut field, and he's going to be growing peanuts with his students and then using that money to support the meals for those kids because they get their only meal every day at his school. It's just incredible what they're accomplishing. It was neat to have Joanne Lipinski with us because she has so many of her exchange students who are Haitians who have all these amazing other ministries. So we didn't just get to see and partner with Solanto, but we got to see all these other young women and men in Haiti who are working to transform their nation. And I came back overwhelmingly hopeful that God is going to continue to do great things there. And I hope that we will continue to be a part of that work. I'm popping a little bit. I don't know why that is. Let's see. Hold on. Maybe it's because of the beard. Oh, dear. Oh, dear. All right. There's always hecklers somewhere. Was that my wife? That was someone else. I don't know. Having said all that, as amazing as our trip was and as meaningful as it was to do a medical clinic for 300-plus people and to provide floors for four families who were previously living on dirt and now are living on concrete and to be able to provide meals for the community and to play with those children, as powerful as all of that was, there is something really special about coming home. And when you walk into the customs facility, and we were in Miami Airport, and you come up and you've got your little passport book, you know, you've got your golden ticket, and you say, hey, here's this, and they look at your picture, and they look at you, and they say, welcome home, come on in. Well, you can't beat that feeling. And so it's good to be home. I'm struck today that this experience of our journey to Haiti is in a very small way reflective of the story of Abraham. Abraham is called also to leave his home. He's called to leave the land of Haran, where he has grown up, in a time where even more than today, those bonds of community and family and culture are almost irrevocable. He's called to go to a new land and a new place. And as he travels throughout our passage, I could almost imagine him with his sort of spiritual passport, getting his stamps for each location where he goes. He gets his stamp at Shechem and his stamp east of Bethel and his stamp at the Oaks of Moreh and his stamp as he moves towards the Negev. But it's his choice to leave, to begin the journey that's so powerful and so focused on in this passage. And I want to read again just the very beginning of God's call to Abram as God begins his work of salvation. Now the Lord said to Abram, go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you. And there is a threefold departure, not just his country, his homeland, but his kindred, his people, and his father's house, his family. He leaves it all behind to travel for God, to go into a new land where God is calling him. It's such an incredible decision that Abram makes that it triggers this irrevocable promise of God. We call it the sevenfold blessing, where God says, I will make you of you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you. The one who curses you, I will curse. And in you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. This decision of Abraham, or of Abram, to leave, to immigrate to a new land, and the corresponding sevenfold blessing of God is the foundation of God's plan of salvation. And as we read the rest of the Old Testament, we have to read with these few verses in mind. We know that there is another covenant. So we call this a covenant, right? A sacred agreement between God and Abram. There's another covenant that comes later between Moses and the Israelites on Mount Sinai, where the Ten Commandments are given. It's the most famous covenant of the Old Testament, right? And it's that moment where God says, if you obey my law, I will be your God and you will be my people. But that covenant is conditional, right? If you obey my law, then I will be your God. And there are plenty of times, as we are well aware, in the story of Israel where they do not obey the law. And God, for a time, for a season, withdraws some of his presence from them. But underneath that conditional covenant is the unconditional promise of God to Abraham and to his descendants. Underneath that conditional covenant from Mount Sinai is this irrevocable promise that they cannot lose. Because Abraham went, they will always be God's chosen people. And they get the benefit of Abraham's faithfulness again and again. Each time they fall away, God refuses to abandon them. I heard once somebody tell a story of a business owner and a father. This business owner and a father had a son who he hoped one day to pass his business on to. And so as that young man grew up and grew older, he gave him a job in the company. And as he grew older, he gave him more and more responsibility. And by the time that young man graduated from high school and spent a little bit of time in the workforce, he started giving him managerial responsibility so he could oversee some of the other employees. And that father began to notice that his son was abusing his power, right? Not being a good manager, enjoying the fruits of being the boss's dad a little bit too much. So he called his son into his office and he said, son, I want you to understand, I wear two hats in our relationship. Sometimes I'm your boss and sometimes I'm your father, right? And as your boss, I'm going to literally put this baseball cap on. As your boss, I got to tell you, you're not doing a good job. I need you to change your behavior. I need you to be the manager that I've tried to teach you how to be. Sends his son back to work. Over time, the same behaviors continue, and ultimately he decides he cannot correct his son's behavior, and so he calls him in one more time, and he says, son, sit down. I'm going to put my boss hat back on. I tried to tell you what was going wrong. You didn't listen. You're fired. I'm going to take my boss hat off and be your father for a second. He takes his hat down, and he says, oh my gosh, son, I just heard that you lost your job. I'm so sorry. How are you doing? And I love that idea that God wears two hats with Israel, right? He wears the hat of the boss, the conditional covenant. If you obey my laws, then I will be your God. But he also wears the hat of the Father, who says, no matter what happens, no matter how unfaithful you may be, I will always be your Father. Because of the promise I made to Abraham, you will always be my chosen people. That's how important this story is. That's how important Abraham's decision is to go. It is the foundation of the story of the Old Testament. And in fact, it's also the foundation of the story of the New Testament as well. Just as God's salvation plan begins with the immigration of Abraham from his father's country into a new land, so the New Testament begins with the immigration of God the Son, who leaves his home and his father's house and comes here and is clothed in flesh and walks among us as Jesus the Christ. And so too, we are called into that story. We are called to be like Jesus and like Abraham, immigrants, journeyers, sojourners in a land that is not our own. This is how the author of Hebrews says it. They confessed that they were strangers and foreigners on the earth. For people who speak in this way make it clear they are seeking a homeland. If they had been thinking of the land they left behind, they would have had an opportunity to return. But as it is, they desired a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God. Indeed, He has prepared a city for them. We are called, like Abraham, to be on this journey with God, to be on a journey where we're called to leave what is familiar and follow Him and His mission. We don't get a literal passport, but I think in some way our decision to follow, our decision to follow God on His mission in the world, our decision to follow God and leave what is comfortable and go where He calls us, is our golden ticket. It is that thing that identifies us as members of a heavenly kingdom. And we have a privilege to have that symbol stamped. Each time that we decide to journey with God, each time we decide to go out where He calls us beyond what is comfortable or easy, we get a mark on our hearts of who we're becoming in the image of Abraham, in the image of Christ. One of the hardest things about coming home from a trip like a trip to Haiti is the culture shock of getting back. You have culture shock when you go away, but you begin to acclimate to that after a few days. It's when you come home and home seems different that you're really struck by how profound your experience was. And that was the case for me even yesterday. There was some culture shock and showing up, even in the Miami airport. But the most challenging thing for me was driving. If you've ever had the experience of driving in the two-thirds world, it's a little bit different than driving here. Okay, so we learned some rules about driving in Haiti when we were among a foreign people and a foreign culture and a foreign language. We learned, first of all, that possession is 9/10 of the law, that if you can get there first, you have the right of way. The one exception is that if you have the larger vehicle, you also have the right of way, right? So we found that pedestrians have to give way to mopeds, and mopeds to cars, and cars to trucks, and trucks to dump trucks, who always win, right? Always win. We found in Haiti that the road signs and the lane markings are, in the language of the Pirates of the Caribbean, more of a guideline than a rule, and that any road can be used by as many cars and travelers as can fit on it at one time. So we had the experience at one point in driving our little van of 12 or 14 people where we were in the two-lane road, so one lane going that way, one lane going the opposite direction, and the car in front of us was going too slow for our driver, who was Haitian, right, not one of us. And so the car between us began to pass. Right, so there was a truck, the car in front of us started to pass that truck, and our driver felt like that car wasn't going fast enough, so he started passing the passing car. Right, both the passing car and our car are in the oncoming traffic, and there is traffic oncoming. And the only way you can communicate that in Haiti is that you honk your horn, right? And so we are sort of screaming honk as the driver himself is honking. Very exciting experience. And so driving home last night on the bus and staying in the lanes was really odd. Really odd. The other kind of experience for me in Haiti, or one other experience for me in Haiti a little more meaningful, was the experience of community. And I was struck by how different that was as well, that while we were there, the community of which we were a part was profoundly different than community as we experience it here. So our very first day, we did a dinner, or I guess it was a lunch, for the area around where we were living. We had, I don't know how many people, 50, 100 children and adults who came to share in this meal. and it was instant family. So we had, there's Sarah Mocha and Paula Barnes as they have children just sitting and crawling on them, which is kind of wonderful. We had a little bit of a dance party going on. You can see us, what's that called? But when you make a line and you walk through, it doesn't matter. We're doing that. Conga. It's a conga line. We had a dance party that continued with some of our Haitian young men and women showing us their sweet moves. There was a point where I was being overwhelmed by children and almost tackled to the ground. It was just an incredible welcome. And as we were there, I was struck by the fact that our community doesn't work like this, right? We don't have this instant family. It takes a while to warm up and for kids and adults to connect here. And it felt so effortless in Haiti. It felt so easy. It felt like they had been waiting for us and we were instantly part of their family. And as we went through that experience of becoming family in Haiti, I was struck by what a gift it was to be there and to stamp my spiritual passport with the names and the faces of those children with whom we were sharing food and love and hugs and community. And I thought, boy, that's what this is about. That's what this call is, to be a people who go with God wherever He calls us. We get to experience Him in extraordinary new ways. And it's not just when we go to foreign countries. We get to do that here all the time. Just a couple weeks ago, we had a Food and Fellowship for the Soul, which is a meal that we do for the guests of our food pantry and for our church members. And it's not to feed the hungry. It has nothing to do with feeding the hungry. It's an opportunity to make relationships, for us to get to know the women and men and kids who come to our food pantry every other week. And when you go there, you are leaving your culture and your comfort and sometimes even your language for a while and journeying with God on His mission. And it's a beautiful thing. And it's an opportunity for us to have one of those passport stamps that says, God was here in my life. We have that opportunity every time that we talk about our faith with someone outside of our church when we're not sure if they are a believer or not. We had a conversation with our Haiti team and we said, hey, when you get back, lots of folks are going to ask, how was your trip? I said, please, please, please don't leave God out of your answer. Right? That you went because God sent you. Don't leave God out of your answer. What an opportunity to say, let me tell you what God is doing and where I saw Christ in a foreign land. And when you do that, you leave your culture a little bit, right? That's not normal for our society. And you go out on a mission for God. There are so many ways that we're called to be countercultural, to be different in the way that we approach our faith and our family, that we think about things like sex or alcohol. We are called to be a people who are different. And every time we experience that difference, we get a little bit of good culture shock. And we realize that we were never meant to be a people who feel at home here. We were always meant to be a people who feel a little bit of dissonance and say, boy, I'm longing for a better country. Now, I got to go from preaching to meddling for a minute because I'm aware that as a people who are sent by God from our homes, from our people, from our language into a world that is foreign, I think we have an obligation to be particularly compassionate to those who are making a similar journey. And in the news this week, there's been a lot of conversation about our country's decision to separate children from their families when they cross our border. And I want to say, first of all, I believe we should be a nation of laws. I'm all for being a nation of laws. But I don't think that Christ would ever approve of us tearing children from their parents under really almost any circumstances except to help the children. And I was thinking this week as we were in Haiti, as I watched all these kids that weren't mine, I thought, what would happen if they came to my country and were taken from their parents? Then I thought, what would happen if I traveled somewhere and I lost Asher or Jonathan or Zoe? And then I thought, boy, what if when Abraham and Sarah went to Canaan, someone took Isaac from them? What if when Jesus and Martha and Joseph went to Egypt, someone took Jesus away from Mary and Joseph? And I am overwhelmingly encouraged that this is one of the places in our nation where I feel like the church on all spectrums has stood up and said, this doesn't work for us. I've heard the most conservative Christian leaders like Franklin Graham stand up and say, no, this is not what our church is about. And I've heard the most other side of the spectrum Christian leaders, like when the stated clerk of the PCUSA and Franklin Graham can agree on anything, it's a miracle, right? I'm delighted that the church has said, no, this isn't of us, but I hope that we as a people can examine our hearts and say, how are we called to be a people of compassion to those who are most reflective of our own story? Because we're not just a nation of immigrants. You were baptized into a church of immigrants who were called by God to leave their home and journey somewhere new. And that's our hope. Our hope is that we will be a people who are never satisfied with what this world can offer, trusting that only the heavenly kingdom of our Savior Jesus Christ can meet our hopes and our dreams and our purposes, and that we will live according to that kingdom wherever we are placed, and that we will continue to journey out in mission for God and receive those celebrations of His presence in our life every time we stamp our heavenly passport, until one day we appear before our King and He says, welcome home. Come on in. Well done, good and faithful servant. So my hope today is that we might consider our calling to be a people who are sent out by God. We're sent out to be on mission for Christ because of the incredible faithfulness of Abraham, because of the incredible witness of Jesus Christ. We too go out unsatisfied with this world, satisfied only with what Christ can provide, to be His hands and His feet, and to be a witness of a sojourning God.